From the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, a border showdown, a budget battle, and a court victory for life. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and Reagan Republican. Congress is back in session, but fireworks aren't confined to Washington, D.C. In response to former President Trump's announcement that he would be heading to the border, President Biden appeared to decide to make his second trip to the border as president. In spite of continued record-breaking crossings, the president has done nothing to stem the tide. Joining Family Research Council President Tony Perkins on Thursday to talk about it was Senator Marsha Blackburn of Tennessee. Here's Tony Perkins.
Senator Blackburn, welcome back to Washington Watch. Great to have you.
It is so good to be with you. Thank you so much.
So this is an issue you've been on for quite some time. President Biden finally goes to the border. He goes to the border today. But you've described his visit as too little, too late. Tell us why.
Yes, indeed. Too little, too late, and to the wrong address. And he spent 50 years avoiding going to the border. He spent the first 3 years of his administration saying there was not a crisis. The border was secure. Now, all of a sudden, that border security is the number one issue with the American people. He decides to go there. And what does he do when he gets there? He blames Republicans, saying, if you would pass one more bill, give me one more law on the books, and then I'll do my job. And what we know is that during his first 100 days in office, he took 94 executive actions and orders that opened the border and made our immigration law weaker. We know Joe Biden's border policy is an open border, and we know, regardless of how many laws are on the books, how many laws that anyone would pass, he is not going to close that border.
Right. It's to him, everything's an issue of money. I'm going to play a clip of his speech or his comments down on the border this afternoon just a little bit ago. Play clip number 11.
They desperately need more resources. Say it again. They desperately need more resources, need more agents, more officers, more judges, more equipment in order to secure our border. Folks, it's time for us to move on this. We can't wait any longer.
So, Senator, let me ask you this question. I was at the border the last year of the Trump administration. It was like a ghost town. Congress hadn't passed any additional laws. They hadn't allocated any more money. It was the president on his own said we're shutting down the border, and he did it. And as you just pointed out, everything he put in place, Joe Biden and his team undid when he became president.
That is right. And President Biden left off the first thing that Border Patrol asked for. And for 30 years, they've been saying, and Tony, you've heard it many times, they need a physical barrier. When you have that physical barrier, you eliminate the ability of the cartels to just run people over our border and into the country and have the U.S. taxpayer finish the job of delivering those people wherever they want to go in the country. They need a barrier. That's where Build the Wall came from. Donald Trump, he listened to the Border Patrol. They said, we need a physical barrier, we need better technology, and we need more officers and agents in order to secure the border. But Joe Biden, he's not going to give them a physical barrier because that would stop the flow of illegal immigration. What he continues to do is try to find ways to make illegal legal. He wants to make illegal immigration legal.
You talk about the border wall, and I saw the wall as it was being erected there.
Yeah.
A lot of the material for building that wall was bought and paid for by the Trump administration.
Correct.
What happened to that when President Biden came into office?
Well, he's been trying to sell off the pieces of equipment and the steel fencing that was sitting there. He's been trying to sell off the gates that would close the gated areas in that border wall. And what we need to do is have a President Donald Trump back in office. We need to go back to building that wall. And Tony, as you were down there, you probably noticed when people were out there working, building that wall, you didn't see these cartels running people across the border. Mm-mm. And that's because they knew they were going to be turned back. But now that the border is open and the Border Patrol is required to take in everyone that raises their hand or touches U.S. soil, then you have this 300,000 people a month, not 300,000 in a year or 300,000 in 4 years, but 300,000 a month. There has been 9 million people on Joe Biden's watch that have come across that border. It is a population greater than the population of 38 of our states.
Now, we know what the president is saying, just like, oh, you got to pass. Congress has to do this. Congress has to pass a law. I'm trying to work with Congress. They won't help me. Let me ask you this question. I know you are out about the country. You're certainly within the state of Tennessee as you travel the state. Are people seeing through that? Do they realize, and have they come to an understanding of the crisis that we have at our southern border?
Yes, they have. And it is the number one issue. I did a telephone town hall with 8 of my Tennessee counties, 8 of my 95 counties the other night. And Tony, the number one issue was all about the border. And, you know, many of our churches that have ministries and outreach, they talk about how there is no compassion in this border policy because of drugs, that now fentanyl is the number one killer of Americans from ages 18 to 45. Fentanyl itself, number one killer. And so many of our women's groups in our churches are working on the human trafficking issue. And they're hearing these stories and seeing these women that have been physically, mentally, emotionally, drug, and sexually abused as they make this journey. And many of these young girls thought they were coming to America for a job and education, and they find out that they are being raped and sexually exploited as they make this journey. And this is what people are being subjected to, and more people are realizing this is not a compassionate or humane way to treat people. The border needs to be secure.
Well, anytime you deviate from the law, it is not compassionate because it ends consequences where you have victims and people who are hurt. And speaking of that, yesterday the president held a White House event to celebrate lowering crime rates. Now, this after we saw a spike in crime and lawlessness followed by, you know, marginal lowering that is nowhere near the 2019 levels. I mean, lawlessness breeds crime.
Yes, you're right. And see, when you look at this administration, look where they're putting their energy. They keep trying to make illegal activity legal. They keep trying to normalize lawlessness. They keep pushing two tiers of justice. That is not what the American people are wanting, and they're seeing through this. And if you were with me in Tennessee visiting with sheriffs and police chiefs, they would tell you they cannot get their hands around the issue of crime in their communities because of the open border, because the drug cartels and the drug dealers that are coming in, because of the gangs that are coming in. They're coming into communities that have never had a gang. They are carrying out carjackings and home robberies and smash and grabs, and they're going into neighborhoods and recruiting kids in those cities to be a part of the gangs. And people are saying, hey, wait a minute, you've got to do something. And law enforcement continues to say, secure the border, and we can get our arms around this.
It's got to happen. We cannot sustain this. It's like our national debt. We cannot sustain that either. Senator, always great to see you. Thanks so much for taking
Absolutely.
Time to join us.
Thank you.
You can find out more about Senator Blackburn when you visit tonyperkins.com. While you're there, click on the link to share your feelings with congressional leadership about the importance of securing the border. Again, that's at tonyperkins.com.
For 40 years, Family Research Council has been in Washington, D.C., championing faith, family, and freedom in public policy and the culture from a biblical worldview. But we need your help to keep going. With your support, we can continue to equip believers to stand firm in our culture and defend biblical truth in the halls of government. Will you consider partnering with us today? To give, text the word GIVE to 67742.
Are you tired of the mainstream media censoring Christian and conservative voices? Are you looking for news about the most important topics of the day, presented to you through the lens of biblical truth? FRC has the answer, The Washington Stand. The Washington Stand is Family Research Council's outlet for news and commentary from a biblical worldview, covering issues from abortion, sexuality, and religious liberty, to education, to what's happening on Capitol Hill and around the world. The Washington Stand reports on the top stories affecting faith, family, and freedom that the mainstream media doesn't want you to know about. Subscribe today to receive the latest news from The Washington Stand in your inbox every weekday morning by texting TWS to 67742 or by visiting WashingtonStand.com. Again, that's TWS to 67742.
Most of us have wrestled with deep questions about the meaning of life at one time or another. Questions like, why are we here? What has gone wrong with our world? Is there any hope? And how does it all end? Thankfully, David Claussen, director of the Center for Biblical Worldview at Family Research Council, has carefully answered each of these tough questions in his latest publication titled, An Introduction to Worldview. With 81% of evangelical church attendees claiming to hold a biblical worldview, and only 21% actually holding a biblical worldview, resources like this are more important than ever. With this new resource, we invite you, your family, and your church to evaluate what makes up a worldview and to see how a biblical worldview provides the most satisfying answers to life's biggest questions. To read the full publication and to see other resources from FRC's Center for Biblical Worldview, visit frc.org/worldview. Again, that's frc.org/worldview.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. On Thursday, the House secured a short-term spending bill that some see as the only path forward, though others see it as a problem. Tony Perkins was joined by Representative Andrew Clyde of Georgia to talk about both sides of this legislative move.
Congressman Clyde, welcome back to Washington Watch. Good to see you.
Tony, great to be with you this afternoon on Washington Watch.
All right, so another short-term continuing resolutions while we're told negotiations continue. That means one of two things have to happen. You've got to get the appropriations bills through the process, or we're looking at possibly another continuing resolution?
Yeah, that's kind of what it looks like right now. We've passed this continuing resolution today, which I voted against because we should not be doing this. We should be passing our appropriations with Republican policy. We should not be passing a CR under suspension. That means that the Democrats have to vote for it, which means it's not going to be a Republican bill. It's going to be basically a Democrat bill, which is why I voted against it. But the solution here, I think, since it appears that we're really not going to get the policy wins that we put in our appropriations that we worked so hard to make sure happen, since it appears we're not going to get those policy wins, I think the best thing that could possibly happen is a year-long CR, continuing resolution, which literally then implements the 1% cut and would save almost $100 billion in reduced spending over last year's Pelosi's 2023 budget, and also then all the earmarks that have been added, all those pork barrel projects, would be eliminated as well, because you can't have earmarks when you have a continuing resolution.
All right, so let me go back and let's unpack that for just a moment. The appropriations, that's the process that, you know, you're a part of that. You've got to go through, you look at the agencies, you look at their budgets, and you approve, you know, their spending request. And so this is what Congress really is supposed to do. But it hasn't done it in over 20 years. So you talk about policy, okay? So this is where these so-called policy writers, and meaning like money's not going to be spent for abortion, it's not going to be spent for transgender surgeries, for the DEI, all this crazy wokeness. This is where you rein this in. But what you're saying is, even though you've gotten those in there, we're not going to end up with those. Why?
We're not going to, because the Republicans are unwilling to fight for it, in my opinion. You have this issue of the higher spending, and the Senate, we sent those appropriations over months and months and months ago. The first one went back in July. We passed most of them in September, in October, and they have sat idle in the Senate because the Senate refuses to take them up unless the Republican wins are stripped out of them. And so now with the higher spending levels that were agreed upon by leadership and the policy wins that aren't there anymore, you know, then the Democrats will vote for it. And we're bringing it up on suspension, which means that it has to have Democrat votes to pass, as opposed to bringing it forward on a rule vote, which would make it a Republican bill, and it could pass with only Republican votes.
Okay, so what it comes down to is you've got the Republicans in the Senate, the Republican leadership, really not going to fight for these policy gains in the appropriations bill. So you got the Republican leader in the Senate, you've got the Senate Democrat leader, then you've got the Democrat leader in the House, and then you have the Republican leader in the House. So you really, it turns out to be 3-1 when it comes to the negotiations process, does it not?
It does, but here, you know, the Republican leader in the House is the Speaker. I mean, he's the third most powerful person in our government. You know, the 3-1, that's not equal. The Speaker should have the authority there, not the same authority in this negotiation as Hakeem Jeffries, the minority leader. But that's what it seems to be. That's the way this government has worked for many, many years, and that's one of the reasons I think it's so broken.
You got to fix that. We're almost out of time. One of the other options here you made reference to is a year-long CR. This was a part of negotiations that took place right when the Republicans took over, that if you have to go to a year-long CR, it kicks in these reductions. This could be the best way forward, but how do you accomplish that?
Well, I think we have to pass it here in the Republican House and send it over to the Senate. And now that Mitch McConnell is no longer the leader in the Senate, and as you see, you know, there's members in the Senate are already lining up to run for leader, which means that Mitch McConnell's authority is pretty much in the tank.
Right.
I think you see a great conservative shift in the Senate. So I think we could win now on a year-long CR, reducing our spending by over $100 billion and eliminating earmarks.
How do you get it out of the House very quickly? I know you've got some defense hawks on the Republican side opposed to this. You're going to need every single Republican vote, are you not?
Well, we are, but I think we could actually get some Democrat votes on that as well, because unfortunately, it's going to be Pelosi's policies, which we're going to basically end up anyway with this half omnibus that we are talking about passing in March.
It's going to be very interesting to watch this process play out. I for one, would be in support of a year-long CR. It'd be one way to get some reduction in spending. Andrew Clyde, always great to see you. Thanks so much for taking time to join us.
Thank you, Tony. Great to be with you.
You can find out more about Andrew Clyde when you visit TonyPerkins.com. That's TonyPerkins.com.
Most of us have wrestled with deep questions about the meaning of life at one time or another. Thankfully, Family Research Council's Center for Biblical Worldview's latest publication, titled An Introduction to Worldview, provides the answers. With this new resource, we invite you, your family, and your church to evaluate what makes up a worldview and to see how a biblical worldview provides the most satisfying answers to life's biggest questions. To read the full publication, visit frc.org/worldview. Again, that's frc.org/worldview.
Are you tired of the mainstream media censoring Christian and conservative voices? Are you looking for news about the most important topics of the day, presented to you through the lens of biblical truth? FRC has the answer, The Washington Stand. The Washington Stand is Family Research Council's outlet for news and commentary from a biblical worldview, covering issues from abortion, sexuality, and religious liberty, to education, to what's happening on Capitol Hill and around the world. The Washington Stand reports on the top stories affecting faith, family, and freedom that the mainstream media doesn't want you to know about. Subscribe today to receive the latest news from The Washington Stand in your inbox every weekday morning by texting TWS to 67742 or by visiting washingtonstand.com. Again, that's TWS to 67742.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. Last week, the Alabama Supreme Court made a historic decision, conveying the right of life to frozen embryos. The left didn't like the decision and tried to paint it as a move against the in vitro fertilization process. We'll start with a comment from Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer.
After last week's stunningly radical decision by the Alabama Supreme Court jeopardizing IVF access, the United States has become an embarrassment to the world. The decision by the Alabama Supreme Court is as cruel as it is enraging.
Can I tell you what is the real embarrassment to America? I'm not going to say it. All right, that was Senate Scare Leader Chuck Schumer earlier today as Democrats have proposed legislation they claim, emphasis is on they claim, creates federal protections for in vitro fertilization. Even though it's not being threatened, in reality, this bill, read it for yourself, as written, raises numerous moral and bioethical issues that go far beyond ensuring the IVF issue. Now, here are the facts. No state legislature has attempted to ban IVF, nor has any bill been proposed in Congress which would ban IVF, nor did the Alabama Supreme Court decision put it in jeopardy. In fact, it has no regulation, for the most part, IVF. It needs to, but it's not under assault. The left is seizing on this opportunity to push some crazy stuff. Actually, this is like Frankenstein, what they're pushing. Joining me now to discuss this and more, Senator Cindy Hyde-Smith from Mississippi. She serves on four Senate committees, including the Senate Committee on Appropriations. She's also the chair of the Senate Pro-Life Caucus. And just moments ago, she went to the floor to object to the Democrats' effort to push this bill forward. Senator Cindy Hyde-Smith, welcome back to Washington Watch. Great to see you.
Well, thank you for having me and giving me this opportunity. I truly appreciate that.
So I watched you on the floor. We were just about to go on the air, and I know that this is actually still being debated, so you're joining us by phone. You exposed what they were doing here. You went down the list of what this bill actually does. Share that with our listeners and our viewers.
Well, you know, they had a lot of misinformation out there, and they're just attempting to exploit the emotions that are associated with IVF to pass their legislation, which, as you said, I revealed is very flawed, and, you know, all the while hiding the harmful provisions in the bill and ultimately harming families. But the thing that concerned me the most was to force the religious entities to violate their beliefs.
Right.
And to put out there, and that would just totally take away the Religious Freedoms Restoration Act.
Right, that's so, the first piece
I just didn't let them get away with that.
This is the first piece of legislation that explicitly waives the Religious Freedom Restoration Act going back to the 1990s, which Chuck Schumer was a supporter of back in the 90s. But as you pointed out on the Senate floor, this legalizes something that we have been fighting for many years, and that is human cloning, which is already prohibited in many states. This would wipe those prohibitions away and legalize human cloning. It allows gene editing, or the so-called designer babies. It legalizes this Frankensteinian type of creation of human-animal hybrids, these chimeras. This stuff is unbelievable, and they're not talking about this on the Senate floor, are they?
Well, they weren't until I got there. And, you know, you just have to really keep an eye on that, that they were just looking for the opportunity to get these things in there that would legalize that while playing on everybody and saying, you know, we just can't believe you don't support the IVF and, you know, how cruel and horrible that is. So somebody has to go to the floor and just really put it in clear terms that it did not ban IVF,
right,
nor has any state banned IVF.
Right.
And, I mean, I am a total supporter of that. My nephew and his wife have three beautiful children because of IVF. And, you know, no one on the Republican side that I can name you is in opposition of that. But to have a bill that had such overreach, and, I mean, full of things that went way beyond, far beyond ensuring legal access to IVF, it's just, I'm sure, part of the overall climate of being in a presidential election, that they really wanted to drill that home and to make it out
right
for things that certainly it did not contain.
So, very quickly, Senator, what are the next steps? They wanted unanimous consent, meaning they could just advance it. You objected to that. So where does this leave them?
Well, of course, they're going to have to start over to, I mean, to CR something that would legalize human cloning, you know, just instantly do it and it become law is pretty incredible to start with. But they're going to have to start over. We're going to have to go through the committee process of anything that they want to do. And you just can't go to the floor and make sure it just passes with nobody in the chamber, that nobody is there to, I guess how you would say, call them out on it,
right,
and present the true facts of what's going on. And, I mean, it's kind of like the Trojan horse.
Yeah.
You know, they it was full of things that no one was aware of, and they didn't want you to be aware of it. But we did the right thing by going down and objecting, and thankfully that the process allows for that we can stop it in its tracks.
Well, you certainly did, and I appreciate you for going down there and raising the awareness of what the bill actually does. Senator Cindy Hyde-Smith, thanks so much for joining us today. Great to talk with you.
Great. Thank you so much.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkel, thanking you for being with us, and look forward to having you back here again next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.